You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family. Hope everything is well for you today. Hope everything is A-OK and that you're going to have a great day. And you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can't do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do those things. But of course, if it's not, and you have to get it done, even in the frigid north, yeah, because it's going to be 60 degrees down here. I'm sorry, y'all. Hey, I don't make the weather. You know, climate change. But man, I feel for my brothers and sisters in the Midwest and throughout. In fact, this Arctic Clipper, this polar vortex, is going to go all the way down into Texas. I seen a thing that's going to be 9 degrees in Dallas. So bundle up. Always dress accordingly. That's what you always should do, regardless of where you are. Always dress accordingly. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that, and then the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. And I just talked to Brother Kwaku. Well, not just, but we're going to get the most recent, these ones in here in February. And I think we got most of them January. And, of course, many programs all the way back from 2018, you know. So I don't know how many we can put on there, but we'll put them on there. And if you want to listen, they're there for you. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program, African Perspectives, is here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times I'm going to give are Eastern times. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then that's followed by from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Thursdays at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. On Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening, y'all. That's right. Time for an Awakening at 8 p.m. on Fridays with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. Sunday from 7 p.m. to 9, Time for an Awakening on Sunday from 7 p.m. Not necessarily to 9 because, Brother Elliot and Richard, they get into deep conversations and good guests and things like that. So they're not set like we are. They can go to whatever, and it's all good. Brothers and sisters, give them a call, and the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We buy black. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, that's right, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses at WeBuyBlack.com. Products that are produced by us and brothers and sisters. This is American and American African History Month, as I like to call it. And, you know, we definitely should be buying, you know, 24/7, 365, really, every month. We buy with each other. But just make it a point, Dan, just like during Kwanzaa, you know, during the day, the fourth day of Kwanzaa, of Ujamaa, cooperative economics. Make it a point. Make it a conscious effort. 365, 24/7. All right. Africa for the Africans, Bomani, Brother Bomani Tahimba, Africa for the Africans. You know I'm always promoting Brother Bomani Tahimba and the work that he has done, outstanding work of taking our people. His website is outstanding. Go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. On the website, you'll see everything that you need. In fact, they have a conference call coming up this Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern and talking about the tours that are upcoming. Senegal and Gambia, Ghana, Tanzania, all these things are coming up and how you can access them. There's a conference call, but go to the website and you'll get the information. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Okay, because they have these, they got in April 2nd to the 12th, Senegal and Gambia, May 24th to June 4th, Ghana, November 18th through the 29th, Tanzania. So check it out. You could be going on a trip of a lifetime, brothers and sisters. Renoka Rashidi, my good brother and friend Renoka Rashidi, he has a one-on-one conference, one-on-one with Dr. Bayina Bello. Can't wait for it. It's this Friday, family. This Friday with Bayina Bello, the 12th at 8 p.m. Eastern. The interview is with Bayina Bello at 8 p.m. Eastern. And the information is here. I'll probably, it's Eventbrite. Go to Eventbrite. An evening with Dr. Renoka Rashidi and Bayina Bello. And so go to Eventbrite and put in Renoko. And it's going to be a nice conversation, I tell you. So I'm in Camp Creek area here in Atlanta. I had to go pick something up in the Camp Creek area. The Camp Creek, you know, this is a strip mall, like 3 or 4 blocks long or whatever. And so I passed by the store because I'm looking for something. And I see Bayina Bello. She's masked up, but I know that sister. I know that gala she wears. I know her stature. I know that sister. She's masked up. And I stop and she smiles. I smile through her mask. You know, we hug, you know. And I give a ride home and talks. And so I'm glad that she's here and she's safe and she had to dash out of Haiti because it got a little hot up in Haiti. And that's just how it is, you know. But she may talk about that on Friday. And but I'm glad that she's here. I'm glad that she is safe. Dr. Bayina Bello will be with Brother Renoko. That is this Friday. Habesha Incorporated. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. Habesha works. They're doing great work here in the Atlanta area with the programs that they have established, you know, and then, of course, the Kashi Project on the continent of Ghana. The work that they're doing is just phenomenal. They deserve to be supported. Please go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. HabeshaIncorporated.org. The LEDGE program. LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Economic Growth. Excuse me, family. Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics, LEDGE. And, of course, the LEDGE group, they deal with the four areas for human existence, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have over
12 projects going in six different countries, employing over 170 people, and have about 260 members and need more members. I talked to Brother Nkosi, and because they have land, brothers and sisters, in Tanzania, $250 an acre. If you become a member of Ledge, and I know the membership is $1,000, and I'm definitely down with that, but if you become a member of Ledge, and you may want to develop land in Tanzania, that you can go there and it's yours. And I don't problem because you're getting it through Ledge, who has a contract with the government of Tanzania. There'd be no issues. And $250 an acre. For another $1,000, you have 4 acres of land. Man, what could you do? And then if you find out what the exchange rate of the money, so you might be able to, just like a sister said, I looked at building a house, what it would take to build a house in Ghana. And she said, like $25,000 to build a nice, beautiful home, land. And I'm telling you, you know, it's all possible. That's why I'm saying for you to contact Brother Bomani, Africa for the Africans, Renoka Rashidi, he gives tours. But do it yourself. Do it yourself. The Ledge Group. Where do I need to go right now? Ah, this is where I need to go. Oh, that's right. Well, Dada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End. And, of course, the Shrine of the Black Madonna, they're right up the street from there. And the shrine during this month is open from 1 to 7 Fridays and Saturdays. Open from 1 to 7 Fridays and Saturdays during this month. So check out the shrine located on Abernathy, as well as Radada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, Mama Nia, I'm quite sure she's open, so give her a call at 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. And the other bookstore, of course, is my good brother and friend, Kazemde Ajamu, at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. There is light in the black dot. Give Brother Kazemde a call at 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. And, of course, the Shrine is also another bookstore. So, you know, you can give the brothers and sisters at the Shrine a call at 404-444-6696, 404-444-6696. But they're only open on Fridays from 1 to 7 and Saturdays from 1 to 7, okay? All right. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family-Centered Economics, the Us Lifting Us broadcast is tomorrow night, every Thursday night on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. Us Lifting Us, the name of the program is Dare to Win. It's from 9 to 10, from 9 to 10. And you can call to listen or you can call to give questions, comments, or concerns at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sanjay-Haiti, Sister Gabrielle Aurelia is doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti up in the mountains in the rural area. And you know she ain't getting no dough. So she's relying heavily on those of us who will support the Sanjay-Haiti organization dealing with our children for their education, health care, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. So brothers and sisters, go online to Sanjay, Sonjay-Haiti.org, Sanjay-Haiti. Akaban Institute, Baba Baruti and Mama Ya Baruti, once again, outstanding. Great presentations this past weekend on how when a woman heals and developing good rites of passage programs. Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. And, of course, you can use PayPal or Cash App to give your donations, your monthly donations. On the Cash App, the dollar sign Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. Ackerman House. And if you're looking for books of Baba Baruti, who's prolific in writing, go to AckermanHouse.com. AckermanHouse.com for the books of Baba Baruti. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesem. Let me go here right quick. Maybe not there. The local metro Atlanta, Pan-African Federalist Movement, you know I'm always pushing and promoting the Pan-African Federalist Movement, having a free virtual town hall meeting Saturday, next week Saturday, February 20th. At 6:45 to 8:30, okay, and that is, and to register, be prepared, to, you know, with your questions and so forth, and I'm going to have Mama Nabantu on next week. We're going to talk about it extensively, and you can register in advance for the meeting, and of course, you got a long piece right here, and then we'll deal with that. You know, but after registering, you will receive your confirmation email containing information about joining the meeting, your link to the Zoom meeting. But the cry of the African man in Africa for the return of his land is so widespread, so unrelenting, so uncompromising. Elhaj Malik El Shabazz, Malcolm X. Divided, we are weak. United, Africa could become one of the greatest forces for good in the world. Africa must unite. Kwame Nkrumah. All of us must not live to see. All of us may not live to see the higher accomplishments of an African empire so strong and powerful as to compel the respect of mankind. But we are in our lifetime can so work and act as to make the dream of a possibility within another generation. Marcus Garvey. And it's still that. And that possibility, brothers and sisters, is still there. We are working hard to bring about the unification of Africa, the United African States, in this generation. Excuse me, in this decade. Damn the generation. In this decade. That's what has to happen. In this decade. The Inye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. April, February 9th. Today marks the beginning of an end for this crap. We in the African community are going to snuff out those traitors, those who send them, who come to assassinate our commitment. Kyrie T.H. Cheatwood. Sometimes, why some menticidal individuals come into our space because obvious rather quickly? They are agents. They're agents of chaos, desperately seeking the rewards and validations of Urugu. They bring uncalled for, unrespectful language as if it belongs there. They avoid addressing the relevant points, instead using unrelated instances and examples to confuse and waylay the discussion. And often, after initially confusing us as to their intent by making one point of agreement, they throw in some hatred for good measure. When we rightfully criticize those who go against the African way, they will introduce humanizing concepts such as love, saying that we should teach through love. Somehow, they remain completely oblivious to Urugu's natural inability to teach in this way, except in deceit, because they have no love to give. These disruptors of the joy Africans find in communing with like minds are the ones that our ancestors would have had in mind today when they said that our job was to deliver the corrective word and let life teach those who refuse to listen. They are quick to play the manipulative, self-serving, I look like you and therefore I have the right to correct you in the name of Urugu race card. These are the marks of corruptors. These are the tactics of menticidal energy vampires. Be careful who and what you allow in the space you have carved out to share with other warriors. Affirm, I see and remove all enemies. Affirm, I see and remove all enemies. February 10th, black business in the U.S. is insignificant and could hardly be missed if it is completely disappeared. This is the singular fundamental reason for our relative powerlessness to control our economic destinies and the reason we suffer chronic unemployment. Our trillion-dollar buying power is meaningless without our own businesses and institutions on the receiving end of that money. Trey Baker. Many wars earnestly believe in the possibilities of a Black Wall Street renaissance. And in addition to that fact that there is no nation building without competitive, strong, and enduring economic institutions, this is a more than reasonable desire for sovereignty-seeking Africans. However, we would do well to consider the fact that a thoroughly disarming menticide has left too many of these economic advocates in a historical fog. Most of their plans seem oblivious to the permanence of the forces which destroy the original Black Wall Streets. They consistently ignore the timeless and non-negotiable violence and greed of the Yorugu. Some are even mesmerized by the propaganda of forgetfulness to the point where they believe that they are not today dealing with the same Yorugu. How naive. They have not asked the critical questions of what realistically needs to be done to prevent a repeat of what happened to the former Black Wall Street following the new renaissance they are so diligently working towards. And knowing Yorugu, this is a question which needs to be answered by warriors before all others. Affirm, I exclusively buy black. Yes, I do. I exclusively buy with us. Affirm. Brothers and sisters, the Inye Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Kwame Nkrumah said at the speech for of freedom in 1961, 4 years after establishing Ghana as the first country to have independence. He said, I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture, united under one federal government, will emerge not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but has a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. He said that in 1961. Some years later, he said, if we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore. Oh, sadly, how right he was, huh? To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effects the European has had on our ability to think. To think victoriously, we must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so as to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans. This is demanded by an African-centered view because we are Africans. And because the future towards which Europe leads us is genocide. Marimba Ani. Tell you. Yes, brothers and sisters, it's that deep. It is that deep. You know, I'm going to talk today about a subject because a lot of times we don't know why things happen. We think they happen because, you know, we have been fed so much ignorance. Some of us think things happen because we are, you know, are innately inferior. Because we believe what Europeans have said about us and our inability to think, to rationalize. Just like just recently, I don't know if you caught it, you know, they've been talking about the NFL and how they have been experiencing traumatic head injuries because of football. Because once that ball is snapped, there's a clash. Once that ball is snapped, and then, of course, because football is a collision sport, you know? And one wants to go one way, and the other wants to prevent that one from going that way. And so, bam, consistently. Especially, you know, I mean, both offense and defense. I mean, the defensive line, the offensive line, when they clash. And so, when the brothers, because now they have a fund that you can access because of the head trauma that they have experienced, the PTSD that they've experienced. And so when these brothers, you know, one was denied. And they come to find out that the NFL was looking at the trauma situation and think and saying that the cognitive ability of American Africans is the same old bull, is less than Caucasian. So naturally you start out in a negative as far as they're concerned. You start out that way. And so then when they measure your cognitive ability based upon this situation, then, you know, so you don't get the full benefit that Caucasians get because their cognitive ability is far greater than yours. And so if they're diminished, yours to them, theirs is already diminished. And I hope and pray that those two brothers and many, many more join in on that suit. They win that suit. And they sue the hell out of the NFL. Because, once again, the belief that African people are mentally, particularly mentally, they can't talk about the physical. They know that. Because we have shown time and time and time again. And even though we have shown time and time again mentally, when you understand what we have done as African people, in spite of captivity, in spite of segregation, lynchings, denigration, dehumanization, all of these things, in spite of, we, as Maya Angelou said, we still rise. And we will continue to rise. But I hope we rise our ass up out of here. That's what we need to do. Quit begging. I just seen a piece on the brother sent it to me. There is a commemorative for the Tulsa. Of course, John Hope Franklin was witnessed that situation. The great historian John Hope Franklin was from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he was around at that time. As a little boy, he witnessed it. So they have the John Hope Franklin reconciliation. I'm going to call my good brother, Chief Igumawale, who gave an outstanding tour of Black Wall Street when we were there last year, January. Was it? I think January or February. They invited us meaning the Black firefighters, American African firefighters, to come back to Tulsa this year because this is the 100th year commemorative of that massacre, of that destruction, you know. And of course, I ain't down with no reconciliation. I ain't down with it when it happened in South Africa, anywhere else. I ain't down with nothing that constantly begs and pleads Caucasians to act right, do right, and be right, because it ain't gonna damn it happen. And so I'm gonna give him a call to see what's happening. You can go there if you get your registration in early, like right now. I think it's up till it's in May, the last week in May, because you know the incident happened on January. Damn, Oshie. On June 1st of 1921. And so June 1st is in the middle of the week, and so they're having it that previous weekend, the 26th to the 29th of May in Tulsa. And I'm trying to call him and find out from him. And I'll get him on the program, because he was on the program twice before, and when and what's happening, you know. So I'll make sure you get that information about Black Wall Street and the 100-year commemoration of the massacre, destruction of our community, and the destroying of our people. And, you know, and we need to look at Elaine, Arkansas, and Rosewood, and all the other places. I mean, I know, you know, and just as I read this piece, that's why I say I love the Inye Sesam. I really do. I thank Baba Baruti. It's really timely. I just read talking about, you know, can we build another Black Wall Street? Well, the reality is, no. Not here. The ones we built, what happened? What happened, brothers and sisters? That's right. The cracker got mad. He's evil. He's selfish. He's greedy. He's a mean-spirited son of a... And what did they do? They vamped on those communities. Really, without provocation. They just needed a spark. If they say, oh, some brother accosted a white woman, oh, that's the great spark they need. But they don't need that. Sometimes they just go ahead and do it. Just like through the years of lynching. I don't know how many of us has been lynched. They don't know what has been recorded. It could be literally thousands. Because here's my son. I say, son, go down to Aunt Judah May's house. Take her this soap we just made. She got some greens there from her garden. We're going to be having some greens the next day. You know, it's going to be delicious. So you take this soap to Aunt Judah May. He's walking down the road. He encounters some crackers for no reason. None. Simply because he's African. They lynch him. They beat him. They cut off parts of his body. They mutilate him. They burn him. It happened. And in some form or fashion, it continues to happen, particularly by the so-called authorities, the police. This is out of the dated 2016. So one of the writers of the Atlanta Black Star, Brother David Love, dated the 16th. But post-traumatic, also too, brothers and sisters, you know what I try to do on this program is use correct verbiage, use correct words. I don't use slave. I use captive. I don't definitely ain't going to use no damn master. I use captor. And many other words I'll substitute. And to me, these are the words we must use. These are the words we should continue to use when you see, because we were not slaves. We were captives. A slave is somebody or something that submits his will to a master. We never submitted. We always resisted. We fight then, we fight now, and we'll continue to fight. Because we're not slaves, we're captives. A slave is somebody who submits the will to a master. We never submitted. So post-traumatic, now I'll be substituting words constantly, and I may even mention those words to let us know. Just like when you see the word discipline. I don't use the word discipline when they mean punishment. The society does. What discipline is self-imposed order. Discipline. What do they call the studies? For those who are listening, you've probably been to college. I went to a night school, so I wasn't really in college, but still, got an associate's degree. They call them what? Disciplines. They call them disciplines. Because you must discipline yourself to go through the rigors of college, even though you might be playing bid whist all the damn time, or spades, or going to parties in the frat house, whatever. You must be disciplined enough to get your studies in. Discipline. Discipline is self-imposed order. And when you don't impose order on yourself, this society definitely will impose order on you. That's why they have the prison industrial complex. That's why they have juvenile detention centers. That's why a lot of our men are locked up. Because they lack discipline. When you don't have discipline, you get punishment. Let me go through this. Post-traumatic captive syndrome and intergenerational trauma. Captivity is like a curse passing through the DNA of African people. The new reboot of the miniseries Roots reminds us of the physical toll that captivity has taken on African people. Captivity was an exploitative system that built global capitalism through the theft, kidnapping, and torture, imprisonment, and prison labor of millions of Africans. However, that process is and continues to be an intergenerational one in which African people have suffered psychic damage. The experiences of the dreaded captive ships, dungeons in the Middle Passage, in which millions of the souls still rest at the bottom of the Atlantic, the auction blocks, the rapes, the whippings, the lynchings, the patrols, the back-breaking, the buck-breaking, the back-breaking and life-ending labor at gunpoint, the separation of families, all inflicted psychological damage on the victims and their descendants. Through their trauma was profound, though their trauma was profound, captivity, the captive African people had no mental health therapists available to them, no counselors to help them cope and heal. And the sickness was passed down to subsequent generations who, to this day, have not received the treatment they so desperately need and require. We haven't gone through a debriefing and defusing and psychological that is done to us. And to me, you need a therapist who is African-centered. I know many therapists, they may have a degree from whatever European school, but hopefully they have a understanding and a sympathy and an awareness of being African and what that really means to help African people who have gone through this trauma. African people have post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, and they may not even know it. PTSD symptoms typically include intrusive thoughts about trauma, avoidance of thoughts and or reminders of the trauma, anxiety, concerns about safety, feeling consistently on guard, fears of being judged because of the trauma, and depression. Individuals may also have flashbacks and feelings of disassociation. Very severe PTSD can result in psychosis, and PTSD can be temporarily or permanently disabling. This is what Dr. Monica Williams said. She's a clinical psychologist and director of the University of Louisville Center for Mental Health Disparities. And this is what she told the Atlanta Black Star, because that's what I'm reading from today, the Atlanta Black Star. According to Williams, who is also a professor in the Department of Psychological and Brain Sciences, she writes in the Culturally Speaking blog at Psychology Today, PTSD has particular significance in American African community. Symptoms specific to culture-based, see, it says race-based, I say culture-based, okay, in American African community may include avoidance of Caucasian people, fears and anxiety in the presence of law enforcement, paranoia and suspicion, and excessive worries about the safety of family and friends, which are all legitimate in a terrorizing ass society that this has been to us. In a society in denial, racism is proclaimed dead and a historical phenomenon. Yet it is very much alive, as manifested in the behaviors of American African people. In her book, Post-Traumatic Stress Syndrome, Post-Traumatic Captivity Syndrome, America's Legacy of Enduring Injury and Healing, Dr. Joy DeGruy discusses the condition that serves as the title of her book. Innocence and angry little boys threatened by a glance, proud parents reluctant to praise their children and feelings the need to inhibit their natural exploratory instincts, friends not being able to celebrate the success of their peers, organizations torn asunder from within. And there's more. Parents feeling the need to protect their children from the police. Issues of skin color and hair texture continue to dominate discussions regarding beauty and physical appearance. The excessive focus on material accumulation. People needing, wanting, and dreaming, yet fearing they will not succeed. Most of all, frustration and anger, at times even rage. Feeling that seem to dominate many of our lives. If you're an American African here in America, none of this may be news to you, and it ain't. Dr. George DeGruy argues that typically society does not address the role of history in producing these negative behaviors and perceptions. American Africans, she contends, adopted their behavior in order to survive the captivity. An example of transgenerational adaptations associated with the past traumas of captivity on an ongoing oppression. The ongoing oppression. I think there's much emphasis placed on culture individuals as opposed to the social forces that created racism. Everyone believing a slightly racist way has a much more deleterious effect on African people than the few people being very racist, Dr. Williams said. Racism is built into the power structure institution in our society, and Caucasian people are taught to propagate racism and not to see it. This process is maintained by the pathological stereotypes and misinformation about African people. European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is a reaction to feelings one social status threatened by the advancement of African people. And while racial oppression has a psychological, multi-generational impact on African people, it also leaves a biological and genetic imprint in its victims. In other words, research suggests that trauma is embedded in the DNA, changing one genetics makeup, becoming transferable to subsequent generations. According to the National Institute of Health, chronic stress and exposure stress hormones alter our DNA. Not the gene sequence, but rather the gene expression. When we are under stress, we produce steroid hormones called, Let me see if I can find that word. It's a word that you need to pronounce. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to try my best to pronounce it right. Yes, here it is. Glucocorticoid. Thank you, word. Glucocorticoids, which affect various bodily systems. Past studies have shown that these glucocorticoids alter the genes that control the HPA axis, which includes the hypothalamus and the pituitary glands of the brain and the adrenal glands near the kidneys. When the FKBP5 gene is modified, this leads to PTSD, depression, and mood disorders. Studies involving the descendants of European Jews survivors under Nazi regime found that these individuals had altered FKBP5 gene along with PTSD, hypertension, and obesity. A 2008 study in the National Academy of Sciences found that people who were permanently exposed to the Dutch famine of 1944-45 had an altered FIFG2 gene, which plays an important role in human growth. 60 years later, children of mothers who were pregnant during that famine develop a number of health problems such as obesity, diabetes, kidney damage, and heart disease. Yeah, but ain't nobody suffered like us. Ain't nobody suffered like us. Ain't nobody had their traditions, their culture, their name, their language all taken from them. Ain't nobody had the threat of constant death and fear instilled in them. Ain't nobody suffered like us. The implications for others, intergenerationally traumatized groups who have endured genocide and racial oppression, such as the indigenous people of this country and, of course, us, including Hurricane Katrina survivors, are blatantly clear. When racism is understood not merely as a system of discrimination for a particular generation, but also a curse that is passed through generations, afflicting our health like the DNA. This helps to shape the discussion on the full extent of the damages created by racism and the need for remedies, repair, and reparations. Dr. Faraya Lubin, associate professor in the Department of Neurobiology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, told Atlanta Black Star that genetics is a matter of nature versus nurture. Nature is what you get from your parents, while nurture is how your environment shapes you as an individual and what is deep. The environment. Because once you come out the womb, you have that already in you based upon your parents. You have all of that. But then you come into an environment where you're bombarded 24/7, 365 with images of your inferiority and notions of your inabilities. Noting that an individual might have a predisposition to developing a certain condition such as bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or suicide. Libman's primary research is focused on investigating molecular and genetic basis of learning, memory, and disorders. If you can you can experience stress early on or later in life. She is also the co-director of the Neuroscience Roadmap Scholarship Program, whose goal is to enhance engagement and retention of underrepresented graduate trainees in the neuroscience workforce. Your gene sequence changes as you age, and stress can distort that trajectory for the rest of your life, she noted, adding that there are different types of stress, such as acute, chronic, and moderate levels. Of course, acute is an immediate onset. Chronic is constant, and of course, other moderate levels. If you are exposed to chronic, unpredictable stress, that could have an impact on how you respond to your environment. Epigenetics serves as an interface between your environmental experience and how your DNA will be interpreted in response to those experiences. Sometimes they are extreme and they destabilize you to your experiences. In case in extreme stress, you can have a long-term effects. The Bible refers to generational curses and influences. And interesting, nature actually supports what the Bible says, which is there is an effect on the molecular epigenetic information that is affected by stress that is transgenerational and passed on to the offspring. What are the solutions? It is difficult because we are just beginning to understand these mechanisms. What are the solutions? The solutions, get your ass out of here. Let's be real. That's what the solution is. That's what the solution is. Behavior therapy, environmental enrichment, has shown to cure a number of disorders. Exposing yourself to new, novel things is good for you, but we don't do enough of it. In animals and humans, we know enrichment helps to cure and alleviate disorders. The problem with enrichment and proper diet is that it takes more than just taking a pill. As a science, I know that diet changes your epigenetics and how you deal with stress. It helps you deal effectively and appropriately to stress. It reduces cortisol levels so you are not as fearful. I think awareness first and foremost is most important. Dr. Lubin added, noting that American African people are beginning to take matters into their own hands. American African society is embracing more of who we are. You see that with women who are wearing their natural hair. Lubin also noted that the attitude about culture are evolving amongst millennials, including young American Africans. But that's not to say that they don't have some of the residual effects of the captivity. And of course, some of them do. In addition, Lubin says, we can learn from those who are resilient and attempt to mimic which is present in resilient people in order to seek treatments for trauma. There is a resilient population and a susceptible population, whether they are disabled and have a background as captives, suffer from the Holocaust. You can separate them into two groups. We can make the resilient, those who will bounce back, and who make the susceptible, those who stay stuck. The genes that encode are different in the resilient and susceptible groups. Interestingly, these generational effects of trauma are not believed to last forever. Not to believe that they last forever, according to Dr. Lubin. I believe it is a 6 to 7 generations. Damn, a generation being 20 to 25 years. Technically, we are beyond these numbers, but we were re-inoculated with Jim Crow and the Civil Rights Movement. I think we as a culture need to make some major changes in the way we think about harm caused by historical trauma. Dr. Williams says, we know now it's not simply in the past, but continues to influence the descendants through both social and genetic and epigenetic mechanisms. Reparations need to be meaningful and not simply symbolic to have a real impact. Yeah, reparations. Meanwhile, in Black Lives Matter era, more attention is paid to the legacy of slavery and its significance in the present day. Police having been killing and abusing our people with impunity for centuries. Now, thanks to dash cam, cell phones, videos, and public outrage, Black Lives Matter. This problem is now getting attention it deserves, says Williams. These images can contribute to a sense of community cultural trauma if nothing is done. But with continued attention, we think we can bring about change. These problems go back to the captivity where force of law was used to intimidate captives. And then after the Civil War to exterminate and neutralize captive males. Finally, Dr. Lubin responds to those who say that American African people should get over the trauma of captivity. It's a naive sentiment to say get over it, but they don't even know what they're getting over. There are symptoms and they don't even know why they're there. It's hard to say for European Jews who suffered their situation, get over it. They are having the same generational effect from their experiences as well. Get over it. Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, brothers and sisters, I have another piece I want to read about and talking about corporal punishment because of our captivity. Corporal punishment. I know that it's very big in our community. You know, people look at the Bible, spare the rod, you'll spoil the child, you know, but that's of course another form of violence. So get ready for that conversation. And of course, join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
To plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions.
The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Arm, women liberationists, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Broken glass everywhere, people on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. A crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage pails, used to be a fag hag. Such a dance to tango, skipped the life and dango. A zircon princess seemed to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she could tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so did it. She had to get a pimp, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much, it's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job, there's a strike at the station. Me on King Kong, standing on my back, can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac, a mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane, I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me,
calm, close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school because the teacher's a jerk. He must think I'm a fool. And all the kids smoke Reaper. I think it'd be cheaper if I just got a job, learn to be a street sweeper. I dance to the beat, shuffle my feet, wear a shirt and tie, and run with the creeps. Because it's all about money, ain't a damn thing funny. You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. They push that girl in front of the train, took her to the doctor, sewed her arm on the game. Stabbed that man right in his heart. Gave him a transplant for a brand new start. I can't walk through the park cause it's crazy after dark. Keep my hand on my gun cause they got me on the run. I feel like an outlaw, broke my last glass jaw. Hear them say, you want some more? Living on a seesaw. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. Say what? It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. God is smiling on you, but he's frowning too, because only God knows what you'll go through. You'll grow in the ghetto, living second rate, and your eyes will sing a song, because he hates the places you play and where you stay. Looks like one great big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, thugs, pimps, and pushers, and the big money makers. Driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you want to grow up to be just like them. Smugglers, scramblers, burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say, I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school. Now you're unemployed, all non-void, walking around like your pretty boy Floyd. Turned stick-up kid, but look what you done did. Got sent up for an 8-year bid. Now your manhood is took and you're a Maytag. Spend the next 2 years as an undercover fag, being used and abused to serve like hell, till one day you was found hung dead in a cell. It was plain to see that your life was lost. You was cold and your body swung back and forth. But now your eyes sing the sad, sad song of how you live so fast and die so young. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Yo, Mel, you see that girl, man?
Yeah, man.
Yo, that sound like Cowboy, man. Yo, what's up, money?
Yo.
Hey, where's Creole and Raheem, man?
They upstairs cooling out.
So what's up for tonight, y'all?
Yo, we can go down to the field, man.
Go check out Junebug, man.
Hey, yo, you know that girl Betty?
Yeah, man.
My mom's got balls, man.
Not
what? Again,
man.
She got hurt.
Oh, what is happening?
Free. Don't nobody move nothing. Y'all know what this is. Get them up.
What?
Get them up.
Yo, man, we down with Grand Master Flash and the Fury.
What is that, a gang?
No.
Shut up. I don't hear you now. Yo,
get up.
Get up.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, of course, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jahad Ahmed. Followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Center with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan. And then on Friday, if it's 8 p.m. Fridays, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. On Saturdays from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. On Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. My guest this Friday is going to be the brother who, if you check out, What's that? My brother's column. He has a column in a number of magazines. It could be in the Atlanta Black Star and Your Black World. And that's his brother, Bashir Muhammad Akinyele. Brother Bashir Muhammad Akinyele will be my guest this Friday. I'm really looking forward to this. His columns have been very insightful and outstanding. So, brothers and sisters, please join me this Friday for a conversation with Brother Bashir Muhammad Akinyele. You know, the question is to whoop a child or not to whoop a child. Of course, I'm a strong proponent of not whooping any damn body. Okay, you know, I played football, which is a collision sport and very violent. I boxed as a kid, and I had to box because me and my brother was being challenged all the damn time, you know. And so it comes to a point you got to defend yourself, you know. So I wound up boxing and boxed for a few years. I wasn't bad. I was 14-2 before I quit, you know. Wound in state championship and that kind of thing because I was a boxer. I wasn't a fighter, you know, because at the time I was boxing, Muhammad Ali was huge. You know, fell in love with Muhammad Ali. Love Muhammad Ali to this day. And I was a boxer, you know, stick and move, jab, da-da, you know. But I'm against violence. But I know violence is necessary, particularly because we're in a society and in a world run by Urugu, run by Europeans, and they are the most violent-prone son of a bitches on this planet. But it has something to do with their evolutionary development. That's why they're so damn violent. And so, because in African societies, prior to Europeans, you know, we weren't violent to our children, particularly. We didn't beat our kids into submission. And I mean, and you and I both have gone to places and you heard, particularly young mothers, and maybe even some fathers, say some very mean things and derogatory things in public to their children, you know, or even hit them. Although a lot of times now, you hit a child, and if it's depending upon how severe you've hit them, particularly in public, you could be arrested, you know. And, of course, there are some children who have, you know, even though it was insignificant and it was maybe, I don't know if it's justified or not, but, of course, a child felt that their parent was abusive and they called Child Protective Services on them, you know. But it is something that has happened to us because of our captivity. So let's discuss this. Captivity left a legacy of corporal punishment on American African communities. And this is in the Baltimore Sun, for those who are in the city of Baltimore. This is from their newspaper, the Baltimore Sun. The author is Kay Ward Cummings. And this is dated the 4th of this month. Leon Gardner Tyler, Jr., the grandson of John Tyler, the 10th president of the United States, died this past September, last year, September. Let that sink in for a moment. Leon Tyler, a man who died only last year, was the grandson of a man who lived when George Washington was president. If that doesn't collapse your perception of time, I don't know what will, for real. For Leon Tyler, time was indeed truly relevant. He could look into his father's eyes and see centuries into this nation's past. It is a gift that most American Africans share with him. All we have to do is look into the nearest mirror. To most Americans, the institution of captivity, and once again, remember, I substitute words. I don't say the word slavery. I don't use master. I don't use plantation. I don't use black. I don't use white. You can train your mind to do the same if you chose to do so, because I believe we should. We should always use the correct verbiage. Always. Because believe me, the European is the one that imposes these words on us. It's his language, isn't it? To most Americans, the institution of captivity is like a fairy tale, whispering softly in the moss-covered branches of a distant cypress tree. But for American African people, the pull of captivity across the centuries is like a net we cannot escape. It is persistently evident. Legacies are a constant reminder of this nation's sins. Violence is the legacy of captivity that I'm most familiar with. Violence and its consequences hang over me and my family like a long, dark cloud reaching back through time. It haunts my dreams and colors my every existence and interaction in this world. Dirty little secrets about much of American African is that violence disguised as corporal punishment is as much a part of our culture as jazz or Black Eyed Peas or church. According to the 2015 study by the Pew Research Center, American African parents are more than twice as likely than Caucasian or Latino parents to use violence as a punishment in the home. I know the word says discipline, but they mean punishment, don't they? Because discipline is not punishment. Discipline is self-imposed order. We're talking about punishment. Journalist and Morgan State University professor Stacey Patton believes she understands why. She has written extensively about how captors who enslaved people used violence to punish them and how those captives eventually embraced the practice. Violence against children in particular was not a habit of captive Africans brought with them to these shores. According to Professor Patton, West African societies held children in a much higher regard than Caucasian society in the Atlantic world, the European world. West Africans believed that children came from the afterlife and they were gods or reincarnated ancestors. You know, we say that today. Ooh, that child got an old soul. Well, he looks for me. He's doing some stuff that Uncle James used to do. You know, we say that. Traditional West African cultural codes regarding violence were supplanted by the cultural moral models of the American captive owning class. Had the captives who crossed the Atlantic been mostly adult from the same nations, spoken the same languages, shared the same blueprint for child rearing that was practiced in the societies where they were captive, and have been given freedom to rear their children without interference from Caucasians, then maybe traditional African rearing practices could have been preserved. But of course, we know it was always with the European, this divide and conquer. So you definitely wasn't going to be speaking the same language and having the same traditions and so forth. In fact, we don't want you to rear your children in that way. They want you to beat your and stick fear into them. The historian Michael Dickman also points a bloody finger at Du Bois Review, a widely read agricultural magazine circulated from 1846 to 1884, which was filled with recommendations about the strategic and tactical use of violence as a method to subdue and motivate captive populations. The captor class of Old South envisioned the whip as a device that corrected the errors and mistakes committed by their captives. Captors frequently describe whipping in such unilateral terms, depicting it as a practice that was rational and had the best interests of the captives in mind. If violence is the long crimson river that bathes the roots of my family tree, captivity is its source. Its waters weave meandering path across time to reach me. I raise and make way for it as family gatherings. It is but one of the many legacies of captivity that still haunt the American African community. Ridiculous myths about African congenital intellectual inferiority lay at the root of American African political disenfranchisement for centuries and persist to this day. Insecurities about American Africans in the antebellum South, give rise to the creation of the police in this country. And lingering perceptions about sexual potency of American African males is the reason that interracial relationships in the media between American African men and Caucasian women are only now becoming common, ain't they? Damn it, you see it on commercials and programs all the damn time. Most Americans are privileged enough to be unaware of these persistent and harmful legacies of captivity. American Africans aren't so lucky. Good article. Let's say, what do we say about this? Do we whoop our children? Do we constantly berate them, degrade them? I know that, and I love my mother. I love my mother dearly. I miss her. My mother did day work. She cleaned the homes of Caucasians. And sometimes she'd come home and she can't whip the cracker's ass. And she'd come home and might find a reason to whip our ass. I remember my mother was whipping me for something. And she told me, don't say okay. I said, okay. I said, don't say okay. I couldn't think of another damn word. Okay, okay. You know? But, these traumas that I brought out today are real. And the reason why we continue to suffer these traumas is because we haven't, and you heard me say this all the time, released the vice grip that this Caucasian, these have on our minds. It is about the mind. We are at war for the minds of our people. Once you have set the vice grip and you know that tool, bam, you just cannot release it. You can't pull it apart. And that's what happens. But acquiring knowledge of self, of our culture, of our traditions and so forth, that knob at the end of the handle of the vice grip, you can begin to turn that knob by acquiring this knowledge. And the more you turn that knob, the tension on the vice grip begin to release, and bam, you open the vice grip. And now you can see the European for who and what they are. You don't challenge them. Don't march. Don't protest. Don't sit in. Don't pray. None of that. Kick their ass to the curb and do for self. You'll see them for who and what they are. As Franz Fanon said, they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they are superior. And there ain't a damn thing that we can say or do to prove otherwise. We have a plethora of information, of knowledge to prove that they are not. They know, but they refuse to acknowledge it. They dismiss it because it doesn't fit. And it continues on. Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, century after century. It'll only break when we break the monopoly that these Caucasians have on our minds. Because not only is our liberation and self-determination impossible, it is unthinkable. Because what we can't conceive, we cannot achieve. That's what this is. That's what I'm talking about today. I ain't talking about just whooping our kids. And although we shouldn't, we should love them. Just as you say, in West Africa, they were honored because they knew they were coming from the ancestral realm. Because in ours, it's not linear, it's circular. It's circular. We come back around. And so we treat children with respect, and we nurture them. We nurture them. The last article talked about nature and nurture. The nature you get from your parents, the DNA you get. The nurturing is because of the environment. Look at this damn environment. Look at it. It is anti-us. But yet we think it is universal. This is, you know, the Caucasian is universal. I tell you, dear brothers and sisters, give me a call at 215-490-9832. We have a number of people who are on. Remember to press star twice. Press star twice. Let me know that you want to get in on this conversation. And I'm quite sure you have something to add. So please do, you know, because this stuff is deep, you know. But the reality is, it is our responsibility to get us up out. Yeah, they put us in it. They continue to do what they do. But it is our responsibility to get ourselves up and out of this madness. My good brother, Ken Wardall, I'll give you a call, dear brother. Thank you for listening, brother Ken Wardall. And I got to come see you. You know that, man. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You know, we, as we all grown up,
Hey, Brother Oshie.
Hey, it's LaRue Ned.
Man, I'm really enjoying this show, man. man, you covered so much material. What I'm thinking of, and it's really hard to add to it, but the thing that...
You broke up on me, Brother LaRue, you broke up on me. Go ahead. Listen, Brother LaRue, call me back, man. Give me a call back because you're constantly breaking up on me, okay? Give me a call right back. I know it's cold there. Maybe that has something to do with the phone lines. I don't know. My brother LaRue calling from Milwaukee. Man, it's cold. Go ahead, LaRue. Are you ready now? Okay, he's gonna give me a call back. 410 Baltimore, 410. Good afternoon. 410. Okay, you wanna listen? That's great. And you can do that, brothers and sisters. You can do that. But if you want to chime in on the discussion, then give me a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Good afternoon, Brother LaRue.
All right. Can you hear me better?
Oh, man, that's much better. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, man, this is a real good show, man. I like the information you're putting out. Man, you pretty much said it all. You brought it all up. And, man, you played that Don't Push Me Close. Don't Push Me Because I'm...
Close to the edge, brother. That's right.
Man, that's prophetic, man.
Yeah.
And that Gil Scott.
Yeah.
Man.
Revolution will not be televised. I try to be on time, LaRue. You know I try. I give effort.
Good afternoon, Brother LaRue. All right. Can you hear me?
So go ahead, Brother LaRue. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, anyway, man, so it's a good show, man, but you know what, I think, you know how we define our problem, you know, I was watching on the TV, they're talking about, they're taking the term Aunt Jemima off, and they're talking about how it's the, this legacy of Aunt Jemima is rooted in slavery,
mm-hmm.
And as we practice European culture, man, most everything we do is rooted in slavery.
That's right, that's right. That's right. All of it. I mean, when you have destroyed a people, you know, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, and you have taken away all the things that make them human, and then you rework them into a Negro or a nigger, you know, their thinking is not going to be in a way that loves themselves. Their
exactly.
thinking is not going to be in a way that they care for one another. You know, also, too, what is problematic is this society. The society perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. During the captivity portion of our unfortunate time of being here, you know, you thought individually, and we still do today. The brother who was out in the fields, his wife got raped and beaten, and then she died, and he said, oh, well, you know, I'm still here. I'm still going to struggle on. His kids got sold off. He's like, well, oh, well, you know, I'm still here. I'm still struggle on, you know? I mean, it's constant like that, all these inflictions, you know? And I understand the will to survive. And that's critical and that's key, because there's no doubt that we do. And in fact, hopefully we understand it, and it would bode well for us in this day and age of the European trying to eliminate us, trying to eradicate us, trying to, you know, to remove us through various means. He will never do it.
But look at this. Look at this, Brother Oshie. They don't change unless they absolutely have to.
Yeah.
They would not have ended slavery if they didn't have to.
Right.
And the story that's being grossly, grossly, grossly undertold is our resistance to slavery.
Yes.
They did not come up with the Emancipation Proclamation out of the kindness of their hearts.
That's right.
They had to.
No, don't.
They had to.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lulu. Go ahead. They had to. You're right.
They had to, mm-hmm. And even today, man, that fear is called negrophobia. That fear is still existing in them, a lot of them to this very day. Trump, man, is a classic example of that. Mm-hmm. And even when President Obama, man, was getting elected, it would come up every now and then, these niggas gonna try to get revenge.
The big payback. The big payback.
Yes, exactly. But that's a story, man. And that's why we have to, like you were saying, I'm paraphrasing what you said, but we do have to turn our homes into sanctuaries where we protect our peaceful sanctuaries.
Yeah,
man.
Right.
Where we teaching our, because we can't depend on them to teach us about us.
No. And see, that's been our problem. We asked for, I mean, I admit that, and then we marched out of school back in the 60s for black history, you know?
Right.
We need black history in our school books back in the 60s. You know, I never forget doing it twice, you know? We're going to march out. You know, I was down with it, you know? We're going to march out for black.
And one of our biggest downfalls was that integration into the school system. We need our own educational system.
Yes.
There is so much black African history and history in America, man, that it would take a whole lifetime to do it. So we can't learn theirs and ours too and learn ours properly.
Well,
so we need one that emphasizes ours and a little bit of theirs.
Right. Well, you know, LaRue, what I've been saying on this program consistently now for about a few years, that we must control the education of our children from the very beginning. So I advocate us establishing schools for ourselves with our curriculum being taught by us at the very beginning, from kindergarten, preschool, kindergarten, all the way up to past middle school. Now,
exactly.
In a high school situation, if you have that as your base, if you have that as a foundation, then you are rooted in knowledge, and you are rooted in the knowledge of yourself, and you can go any other school. You're not going to that school try to make no damn friends. You don't give a if the person who's teaching you don't like you, because you know why you're there. You know why you're there to get, yeah. See?
Every time I get a chance, man, I ask our children what they're learning about black people in the school system. And it's like they're almost embarrassed, man, that I bring it up. I've had parents, man, jump on my case, get angry with me for asking, you know, what are they learning about themselves in the school system?
Because
mm-hmm. they know what's happening. But look, there's one thing, man, we could compare. When we had our own school systems, what kind of cultures we had. I mean, maybe they, you know what I'm saying? We had our own, when we had our own school system, that's where Black Wall Street came from.
Yeah.
Anyway, man, you covered a lot of stuff, man. I want to, man, those are some very interesting articles you were reading, man.
Yeah,
very
yeah.
like that.
I appreciate it, my brother. Stick with me, LaRue, okay?
All right.
All right, man. Peace. All right, my good brother, LaRue, Ned. 646-646, good afternoon.
Odios, what's happening, bro? How are you?
I'm well, Jay. How are you doing today, brother?
I'm good, brother. Listen, I may have to disagree with you a little.
Okay.
There are some mofos on the planet who need to be beat within an inch of their life. an inch of their life. I mean, just an inch. And you could go to a quarter of an inch of their life because their brain is broke, pop, or whatever it is. They don't understand nothing.
Well,
nothing.
See.
Than a foot in their ass.
Well, you see, I just mentioned
some people like that.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned nurture and nature and nurture. So before they came out the womb, they were being developed in the womb through the DNA of their father and the chromosomes of their father and mother. They came out the womb, and had they been nurtured at that particular point, the environment would not have changed them. The environment would not have made them be selfish and greedy and ugly and mean and nasty and should be whipped to an inch of their lives, you see. See,
bro,
so
bro,
that's the reality. They weren't born that way.
Hey, OC, let me tell you something.
Okay.
Some people were. I grew up when, you know, you just had fools, man. You had fools. You imagine two fools having a baby. What do you think the child is going to be? A fool. It's just that plain and simple, man. I remember growing up, it was different. When we grew up, we handled our business with our hands. There was always one or two cats in the neighborhood that you just had to put your foot in their behind all the time because they didn't know how to act right. And the mom and daddy treated them the same way. And you know what the funny thing is? It either went two ways. They got their mind right, or they went to jail. And a lot of the cats that I grew up with got their mind right. But a lot of them went to jail also. And that's just, it's a pecking order in life, OC, that sometimes we don't understand. You got to sometimes treat people how to act and behave in society because they just don't get it, man.
Well, you know what, Jay?
I grew up like that.
I hear you. I hate to say it like this, but sometimes somebody going to be left behind. I'm putting the stake out saying, this is who we are. We're African people. Let us get up out of this madness. Let us teach ourselves. Let us work amongst ourselves. If you don't want to do it, that's on you. You go ahead. Because I recognize the mental the mental side that we have experienced and continue to experience and what it has done to us, you know.
It's sad, but we got a lot of fools in our community.
Yes.
You can recognize them quick. You know what I mean? I knew a cat, man, went to jail, stayed out of jail for a good 10 years, and then got into an argument with a cat and then just killed them. I mean, it's just utterly ridiculous. You couldn't just man up, throw them mitts, and let the mitts do what they do. When you lose, you go on. But nowadays, you want to kill a person.
No, that's right.
And go back into the box
right.
that you was out of for 10 years. So your brain is broke.
Man, listen, Jay.
Your brain is broke.
Jay, you're supposed to be broke in this environment. This is European's environment, and African brains are supposed to be broke. But check it out. Just this past week, I'd heard about three incidents of somebody killing somebody foolishly because guns are guns are really, there's armament for every man, woman, and child in this country two or three times over. And there's over 300 million people in this damn country. That's how much armament it is.
It's crazy.
Yeah. You know, and so therefore,
fight no more.
Huh?
The kids don't fight no more.
No.
Let me tell you something. Oh, see, when I was 9 years old, that summer, I fought every day. I fought every day with three kids that I just had to throw the mitts with.
I hear
and
you,
it
man.
It was beautiful. And you know the funny thing is, I saw them like 20, 30 years later, nothing but love.
Well, listen.
Nothing but love. They doing their thing. I'm doing my thing. We laugh. We joke. We reminisce how, you know, they smack me upside the head and I smack them upside the head. You know, just having a nice fun and laughing. And the three of us came into agreement that these kids today couldn't hang with us.
Yeah.
Because they all they know is about guns and knives and all that.
Yeah.
They don't know nothing about handling their business. That's why when a lot of them go to jail, because I got a couple of friends that are correction officer, they always talk about when they realize there ain't no gun and knives there and they got to use their hands, oh, it's a whole different story. Because they ain't never been used to dealing man up. So when they get there, you make a punk out of a punk quick.
Well, you know, the thing is this. It's a different era. There's no doubt. When I was coming up, and if those who are on the line who know me, they know what I look like. And so me and my brother, we had to fight all the time. In fact, I went to transfer to a grade school. The first day I got there, this cat wanted to whoop my ass because he said I was talking to his girl. I didn't even know no damn body. First day I was there, me and that cat named Nathaniel Lane, we fought. And in fact, him and his brother Franklin, I whooped both of their ass on the playground. But I had to, me and my brother were just constantly being attacked. And so we decided, man, that we're going to defend ourselves. And we bought a boxing book and we practiced. And my mother bought us some gloves. We went to the local Salvation Army, the gym. We went into the locker room because which wasn't being used but too much. And we threw the gloves down and said, let's thump. Let's thump. And from that point, my brother, who's older than me, he went into the Golden Gloves. And then after that, I went into the Golden Gloves. I boxed because, you know, I understand that you got to defend yourself. This is the ugly. But nowadays, though, Jay, you're right. It ain't about defending yourself as a man. You throwing some punches here and there and the best man win and you be friends later. No, that ain't happening. You know,
nope.
I got a piece and I blow your ass away for little or nothing. You know, at the drop of a hat, or I bust a cap in your ass for a hat. You know,
it won't do nothing to the white man.
No,
won't do it.
Exactly.
Scared to the white man.
Exactly.
Scared to death for the white man.
Here's another example. In Southern Africa, the Caucasian, the Afrikaner is the one who has prevented the Africans in South Africa from getting a good education. And so now they want to hire some people. They don't have the skills. And so brothers and sisters from Nigeria and from Ghana are coming to South Africa getting these jobs. But the South African brothers and sisters, they want to kill them, fight them, and not the Caucasian who's the one that's doing it. You see? See, that's a constant thing amongst us is that the European has, you know, with his ability to use the tricknology and the psychological damage that they've done to us and the mental side they put on us, where we hate ourselves and kill ourselves. And what I talked about later in terms of corporal punishment on kids, that's happening in Africa. Because everywhere the European is, he's always been like that. He's anti-woman. He's anti-child. The dog is his best damn friend. You know?
Hey, OG, the white man, I'm sorry to say, is anti-human.
Yeah.
He's anti-human. White man, anti-human. There's no one else on the planet who has caused more problems, done more harm to other races of people than the white man. And we can say it all the time. But listen, OG, put me on mute, man.
All right, dear brother.
Do something right quick.
All right, Jay. Have a good day, man. Peace to you. Hotel. Yeah. I mean, we are in a tough situation, family. You know, we're in a tough situation. When that child comes out the womb of that sister, and it is yours and hers, soon as that child comes out the womb, nurture that child, care for that child, raise that child, love that child, expose that child to the culture of African people. Expose that child to the love of themselves. When that child is ready to go to school, send that child to a school or homeschool that child. If you can't send them to Akaban Institute, and now you can do it virtually. That's right, brothers and sisters. You can call Baba Baruti and Mama Yabaruti or go to Akaban. You can do that virtually. But I'm quite sure there might be a place in your community Give that child that foundation of loving themselves. Let that child be a model for the other children. Yeah, some of the other children are going to talk and ridicule and try to degrade, but that child ain't going to give a damn because he knows and she knows who they are historically and culturally. You're honoring them with knowledge of self and who they are as African people and their history and their customs and their tradition and a belief in themselves. You're arming them. So as they go through grade school and middle school, now they're ready for high school. You can take, he can go to the local high school. You don't have to, you know, he can go there. Because he knows and she knows why they're there. They're there to get everything that school has to offer. They don't give a damn if the teacher don't like them. They're there. And they ain't even listen to no damn body. The words and rhetoric, because also, too, in that child's upbringing, you taught him and her self-defense. They ain't bullies. They'll kick your ass if you try to mess with them. They're not bullies. They kick bullies in their ass. And so they're there to learn. Maybe they need advanced courses in calculus, all that other kind of stuff, because of what they want to do to help our people. They can get that from them. And then once they get out of high school, they can go to any college they want. But, you know, because, I mean, even if they go to the so-called HCBU, that's Caucasian. You know? They wouldn't get the kind of money that they get if they were revolutionary. They wouldn't get the kind of money that they get from corporations if they were real radical and they were educating African people to be, you know, independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign. But there are things that are there that are, that we need as African people. Get that. Everything should be about building for us. Everything. Brother LaRue.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Hey, Brother Osi, you know what? I'm reminded of a time when and we see it on the news every once in a while, where we were under attack by people who are opposite of us, and we taught being nonviolent towards them. We should have been, and at the time, we were experiencing almost the same kind of violence towards ourselves, by ourselves, under those conditions. But the language was, let us be nonviolent towards our oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
And we became nonviolent towards our oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can become nonviolent towards our oppressor, we should be able to do it for each other or
right.
towards each other.
Right. Good point,
you know,
brother. Good point, because, you know, because of the theology, because of Christianity and love, just like just like this reconciliation piece, you know, in Tulsa in May. I'm going to call my brother Chief Ugumawale, who does an outstanding presentation and tour of what happened to the brothers and sisters in the Greenwood, Archer, and Pine District of Tulsa, and find out from him what this, you know, because it seems to be very commercial, you know. But I'll find out,
okay.
And I'll let you know, because, I mean, I really want to go, physically want to go to Tulsa. You know, they offer in person as well as virtual, and they both cost some money. In fact, the virtual is about $100, but it's a 3-day weekend. It's the 26th to the 29th, you know. Because the first when it happened, June 1st when it happened, that's in the middle of the week. So they're taking that weekend prior for this commemoration, and to me, it's very important that we, you know, observe this, because this was the beginning of the European, not of the beginning. I shouldn't say that because it's always been there, but this is a real blow of what we try to do independent of the Caucasian, having our own, you know, not begging them for nothing. Self-contained.
Let me throw this in there real quick. I know
yeah.
time's getting short, but we have a common problem And our biggest problem, I think, is how we relate to each other, how we deal with each other. If we have a common problem, then we need to look for a common cause. Now, one thing, man, is that the kind of message you're giving out, it won't be given out in the school system. But the message that's coming out in the school system and how we're being taught, which is something we've all been exposed to, we need to look at that as the source of our disproportionate suffering and division that exists among us. Like Carter G said, our education makes it necessary.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. So anyway, I know you want to close out. I'm going to let you go.
No, Brother Rue, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you always listening and calling, man, and being a friend. And, man, you stay warm up there, man.
Hey. I'm going to do my gosh darndest.
I know that's right, brother. Okay, brother. Peace to you.
All right, man. Shine on, Oshi.
Right on.
Shine on.
LaRue Ned, Black Laws for Black People. But as we get ready to close, family, I got a couple minutes if you want to jump in and hit star twice. This Friday, I'm really excited about Brother Bashir Muhammad Akinyele. You can read him on the Black World, Your Black World, as well as Atlanta Black Star and a few other columns. He's a very insightful brother. In fact, he was on Time for an Awakening about a month or so ago. And so I'm looking forward to having a conversation with him on this Friday and trying to set up some other guests for us. You know, but you know me, man, and if I can't get a guest, I'll run my mouth. The bottom line is that we listen, but more importantly, we learn and we internalize that for action. You know, that's what's important, you know, that we do it. I mean, if I just ran my mouth all the time, I'm trying to do my best to do some things, you know. Try to make an impact, try to do something in these last, hopefully, few decades of my life. You know, hope to be around for a while. You know, I mean, I'm a member of the Pan-African Federalist Movement. That'd be one thing that I would love to see, that movement takes off and that Africans on the continent are embracing the idea of One Africa, are starting to put in motion. And even the countries that are more advanced than the others recognize how important it is that we, you know, kind of band together and help one another. And that we develop infrastructure across the continent. You know, we ain't got to, you know, like in some countries they now, I just saw, the Arabs sent a satellite or a rocket. I'm like, damn space. I ain't mean it like that, but the problems on Earth are immense. They're serious. Well, maybe because they're trying to, just like in that story that they had back when I was in high school, where the Caucasians messed up the damn planet so bad that they sent us. No, did they go out of space and they wanted to come back? Yeah, that's what it was. They went to outer space and they messed up their stuff so bad that they wanted to come back to Earth where we were. And the question that was asked, should we let them back? Ah, you know what I said. Hell no. Because, and in fact, even at that time in the 60s, many of our people understood and knew there is no way that we could do something with this Caucasian. There's no way. There's no way. There's no way we can get along peacefully without the Caucasian trying to take our resources and take us as people. No way. And so many of our people understood then. But of course, the majority of our people have constantly said that we can you know, use moral persuasion on these people. We can get them to respect our humanity. We can get them to love us and love, we love them, and we all kumbaya, all that bull, you know. And to me, we have done it so many times, and so many times it has failed and will continue to fail. Stop it. The main thing we need to do right here and right now is, you know, close ranks, pull resources, and do for ourselves. And if you don't want to be in that circle, stay your ass out. One thing Dr. Clark said, I love Dr. John Henry Clark. He said we must have the ability to include and exclude. For those of one who want to be on the include or on the end of African sovereignty, African independence, African self-determination, African liberation, come on in. If your ass ain't down with it, and if your ass is somebody who's trying to be a subversive or trying to be, no. In fact, to me, not just kick you out, we should kill you. That's how deep this is. We are in war for the lives of our people. This is serious. What I talk about every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I recognize it's serious. And once again, you don't get my perspective. You don't get my opinion. Because, in fact, I cussed a lot today, didn't I? I sure did, because I'm a little bit emotional. Because that's what happens. My opinion is profane. What I try my best to do is give you the information and knowledge from our scholars, our historians, men and women who are just dynamic, and give you that perspective. Oh, it's time to go. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate this time. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. But the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate this time. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibivodie. Bibivodie means our victorious destiny. We will be victorious. Brothers and sisters, also too, the program I talked about a few days ago about we need to learn an African language, and I specifically say we should learn Kiswahili. Bibi Atumi, Abibi Atumi, ABIBITUTI.com has a beginner's class for Swahili. Go to BibiAtumi.com and enroll. All right? Become a member. All right, family. Once again, my guest this Friday is Bashir Muhammad Akinyele, and I hope that you'll join us. Peace, family.